This is Julia White. I'm giving the update on radiation management for breast cancer on behalf of the 2020 ASTRO Annual Refresher Course. My disclosures are seen here. I have none other relevant to this presentation. The objectives of the talk are seen here, but specifically what I want to talk about today is go over three main areas: breast conservation for ductal carcinoma in situ, then breast conservation for early stage invasive breast cancer, and finally key features of regional nodal radiation in the adjuvant and neoadjuvant setting for node positive breast cancer. Starting off with ductal carcinoma in situ, there are about 63,000 cases diagnosed each year. This is done by mammographic detection most commonly. It typically presents as microcalcifications in about 90% of cases. I have listed here the guidelines, most of the guidelines for the College of American Pathology for reporting on ductal carcinoma in situ. It's specified that after excision, the size should be reported, the largest on one side, and the number of blocks involved. Architecture, as shown in the figure on the right, should be specified specifically. Nuclear grade 1, 2, or 3 should be specified. Comedonecrosis is quantified as none, focal, or central. And margins need to be specified for which margin is involved and quantified whether the margin involvement is minimal, moderate, or extensive. DCIS diagnosis increased with implementation of screening mammograms over the last 2 decades or so. This is a graph of SEER incidence rates from 1975 to 2009 for DCIS versus breast cancer by age and all races. And what you'll notice is that if the red circles and the green triangles representing DCIS detection and diagnosis from less than 50 and over than 50 respectively has a very sharp rise in incidence over the 20-year time period relative to invasive cancer, which has a rise but a much with a much slower, much more shallow slope. Importantly, it's also key to note that not just the increase in ductal carcinoma in situ, but when you look at what type of DCIS is diagnosed, it's predominantly lower grade DCIS, and higher grade DCIS incidence has really remained pretty stable. This is a nice study that looks at the local therapy patterns for ductal carcinoma in situ over about a 20-year time period in a very large SEER population. You can see from the figure on the right that over the last couple decades, lumpectomy and radiation therapy has increased steadily. In contrast, lumpectomy without radiation and unilateral mastectomy has declined. It's interesting to note at about the year 2000, you see an increase in bilateral mastectomy. Within the study, they found that there were clinical trends for the type of local regional therapy utilized. Bilateral mastectomy was seen in the youngest median age of the population. On the opposite side of the spectrum, women with a oldest median age of the population either received no treatment for their DCIS or lumpectomy without radiation therapy. This same study looked at survival trends in this large cohort of DCIS, and it's reassuring to see that regardless of whichever local regional therapy approach was taken, the 10-year survival overall was greater than 98%. I think as we look into how to use radiation or when we use radiation following lumpectomy for breast conservation for DCIS, it is helpful for me to have think about what my goals of treatment are for DCIS. And these change, vary somewhat from my goals when I treat an invasive breast cancer. Following a lumpectomy radiation, I want to maximize local control, prevent a first invasive breast cancer, sustain her freedom from mastectomy, and maintain a sensate and acceptable cosmetic breast appearance. This is for invasive breast cancer. Similarly, want to maximize local control, but in this setting, I'm trying to make treatment equivalent to mastectomy, which will, in addition, prevent invasive recurrence, can help reduce distant metastases, that optimizes breast cancer and overall survival, as well as want to maintain a sensate and acceptable cosmetic breast appearance for this patient. The success of radiation therapy following lumpectomy really is contributed by these four randomized trials that are looked at the addition of radiation post lumpectomy. They are very mature with almost 20-year follow-ups in all trials, and as you can see, there's a the addition of radiation therapy reduced the in-breast recurrence by approximately 50% in all four trials, and the incidence of invasive recurrence represents about 50% of all recurrences. However, when you look at the four seminal phase three randomized trials that established the efficacy of radiation post-lumpectomy for ductal carcinoma in situ, and examining the patient population, you can see these are patients that we see less commonly in clinic in this day and age. They were accrued more than 20 or 25 years ago. Not all were mammographically detected. Hardly any had endocrine therapy or tamoxifen. The mean size was up to 20 millimeters, which would be quite large in this day and age. Not all had negative surgical margins. And really importantly, when you look at the likelihood of having high grade or comedonecrosis presence, up to 30 to 50% of the population was found with this. Nevertheless, the early breast cancer trials collaborative group again confirmed the benefit of breast radiation post-lumpectomy for ductal carcinoma in situ when taking these four trials with a patient-level meta-analysis showing that you have a reduction in breast recurrence by just more than 50%. One of the I think w one of the most important contributions of this meta-analysis is these two figures demonstrating on the left that the addition of radiation following lumpectomy for ductal carcinoma in situ was not associated with any additional breast mortality without a breast event, and importantly on the right side, the addition of radiation therapy following lumpectomy for ductal carcinoma in situ was not associated with any excess heart disease mortality. Another important component of the treatment of ductal carcinoma in situ post-lumpectomy is the use of endocrine therapy. This table demonstrates the trials that looked at tamoxifen effect initially. This includes NSABP24, which randomized patients between placebo versus tamoxifen following lumpectomy and radiation, and the UK ANZ trial, which was a 2x2 factorial. I have put them in this table, the B24 data combined with B17 to allow us to look at the events for lumpectomy alone, lumpectomy plus TAM, lumpectomy and radiation, and then lumpectomy and combined therapy. What I would like to point out is when you look at the addition of tamoxifen alone without radiation, there is some benefit, albeit somewhat modest. And when you look at the column all the way on the end, which I've highlighted with a red square, the addition of radiation therapy and tamoxifen gives you the largest reduction in event rate. And this is true for all in-breast events, invasive, and DCIS events as well. And in fact, the DCIS events. Reductions might be considered a little bit more prominent. It's important to understand how that as with time, trends in adjuvant therapy for ductal carcinoma in situ following lumpectomy have really changed, and it's really now treated according to hormone sensitivity. This is illustrated nicely in this National Cancer Database study, where on the left, hormone receptor positive patients, you can see the most common treatment post-lumpectomy was radiation therapy and endocrine therapy. This contrasts compared to a smaller portion getting radiation therapy only. On the other side of this figure, where hormone receptor negative patients are, you see the most common adjuvant treatment is radiation therapy alone, and radiation therapy and endocrine therapy to a much smaller extent. It's interesting to note on the kind of the bottom of those bar graphs that the patients who received no adjuvant therapy post-lumpectomy is actually fairly similar in both the hormone-sensitive and hormone-negative ductal carcinoma in situ cases. Now that we know that we have an increased detection of lower grade ductal carcinoma in situ that is smaller, and that we know now that treatment is by hormone sensitivity, many trials tried to examine what patients can we omit radiation on. And this is one of the first from ECOG 5194 that was a single arm prospective trial that observed in breast recurrence after lumpectomy for DCIS in 665 women. They identified two cohorts of patient: a low risk, meaning a lower intermediate grade tumor size less than 2.5 centimeters, cohort one, and then cohort two was a high grade but tumors less than 1 centimeter. Margins had to be negative by more than 3 millimeters, and the median follow-up was 12.3 years when last reported. As you can see in the table on the right, the populations were similar in terms of age and menopausal status, and they, despite having different size, maximum size requirements for eligibility, ended up with a median size that's very similar. Tamoxifen use was less than a third of patients in both cohort one, and even a smaller percentage in cohort two, less than 25% of the patients enrolled. This is the 12-year outcome data, where you see that for the lower risk cohort at a median follow-up of 12 years, the in-breast recurrence risk was about 14.4%, which some patients would find acceptable without radiation. Invasive recurrence had the similar pattern of it being approximately half of all recurrences. The higher risk cohort 2 had a much higher risk of in-breast recurrence of about 25%, which I think many would say is unacceptable and would recommend radiation in this case. The question then became is if you have a lower event rate with ductal carcinoma in situ, that is a low grade and on average smaller in size, is there a benefit from radiation therapy? And this is really what NRG, RTOG, and 9804 asked in its phase 3 randomized trial comparing radiation to observation for good risk DCIS. Of note, the eligibility for this trial was identical to that for the low risk cohort 1 in ECOG 9154. This trial was meant to accrue 1,790 patients, and the total accrual was 629, as it closed early for poor accrual. When looking at the patients enrolled in RTOG 9804 compared to those on ECOG 5194 cohort 1, you can see there's actually quite a bit of similarity in terms of age. The percentage of patients were over age 50. Very similar mean size at 9804 to the median in ECOG 5194. The main difference is that tamoxifen use was nearly double in RTOG 9804 compared to that used in the low cohort one low risk group in ECOG 5194. When we look at the outcome of adding radiation therapy post-lumpectomy for good risk DCIS with a median follow-up of almost 13 years, the in-breast recurrence is comparable to what's seen in the ECOG 5194 of 12.2%. Radiation therapy did significantly reduce the recurrence to 3.6%. Similarly, the addition of radiation had a significant reduction on invasive recurrence by 12 years as well. The contralateral occurrence was statistically similar, even though the numerically higher in the RT arm. It's important to note that tamoxifen use was somewhat higher in the no radiation therapy arm at 66% compared to 58% in the radiation arm. On multivariate analysis of an RTOG 9804, only treatment arm, meaning observation versus radiation therapy, was significant, and the use of tamoxifen. This tells me So when we compared the patient treatment variables on NRG RTOG 9804 versus other phase 3 randomized trials that we talked about previously, you can see that there's a difference, and all these patients were mammographically detected. Most had endocrine therapy in the form of tamoxifen. The mean size was less than half of what was on other prior trials. All had negative surgical margins, and there were no high nuclear grades or comedonecrosis within the 9804 trial. So, what are the conclusions from 9804? Is that there's a group of women who will think that post lumpectomy, that 12% in breast recurrence by 12 years is acceptable, and will not want to proceed with radiation. On the other hand, after discussing this with patient and understanding her clinical situation, we know that the addition of radiation had a significant reduction on all recurrences and invasive recurrences, which was unexpected. The better than expected benefit with addition of radiation is what made this trial that was it didn't meet its accrual goal, be able to have make conclusions about treatment. So then, as we think about endocrine therapy for DCIS, the question is an aromatase inhibitor like anastrozole better than tamoxifen for radiation? NSABP B35 addressed this question in a large trial of 3,100 patients. 64% completed 5 years of their medication. This was a higher risk population, as you can see that comedonecrosis was present in about 40%. The primary endpoint was breast cancer-free interval, which includes in-breast recurrence, regional recurrence, distant metastases, breast cancer death, and contralateral breast events. At a median follow-up of 9 years, the addition of anastrozole improved breast cancer-free interval by an absolute amount of approximately 3%. On further evaluation of the interaction between age and anastrozole, it was found that anastrozole was superior only in women younger than 60 years of age. When looking further at the results from NRG NSABP 35, it is clear that the addition of anastrozole compared to tamoxifen overall had improved breast cancer-free interval. However, when you look at this more closely, you see that this is really driven by the contralateral events from the anastrozole, and there was no significant difference in ipsilateral breast events with the addition of anastrozole compared to tamoxifen. Importantly, women who had were randomized to the anastrozole arm had more difficult time with vaginal symptoms than those on the tamoxifen arm. And these are the type of information that is important to discuss with your patient as you think about which of your endocrine therapies you may recommend for them. So the question then becomes, if we know that there's approximately a 12 to 14% risk of in-breast recurrence overall after ductal carcinoma in situ, and 50% of that will be invasive at approximately 12 years, which patients should go forward with radiation, and which can you assure are comfortable not getting radiation post-lumpectomy to prevent their first invasive cancer? In molecular and biological prognosis, could be helpful in this setting, and particularly looking at the DCIS recurrence score and a newer score, the decision RT. This is the DCIS recurrence score. It's made up of 7 cancer-related genes and 5 reference genes. It's scored from 0 to 100. There were 3 specified risk groups: low, less than 39, intermediate, 39 to 54, and high, greater than 54. This was studied and initially validated in the ECOG 5194 cohort studied for DCIS recurrence, was about 327 cases. The median age was 61. Though the study itself did not collect hormone sensitivity, we do know that when for the purpose of this correlative study that estrogen receptor was positive in 97% of the cases. What we find is that DCIS score was prognostic for in-breast recurrence for low, intermediate, and high risk, as seen in the figure on the right. In addition, it was similarly prognostic for invasive breast event with by 10 years, predicting a 3.7% in-breast recurrence for a low DCIS score. Keep in mind that in this cohort, 83% of patients studied had a grade 1, grade 2 DCIS. The DCIS recurrence score was further validated in the Ontario registry study, where a higher percent of patients had grade 3 DCIS and similarly was found to be prognostic for in-breast recurrence. And then this combined analysis of ECOG 5194 and the Ontario DCIS registry refined the in-breast recurrence estimates by the DCIS score, adjusting for clinical pathologic features. This is sort of a busy slide, but I wanted to put it in because this is the type of report you get when you order a DCIS score, where you can see that depending with increasing tumor size, increasing age, and your DCIS score affects the prognostic likelihood of an in-breast recurrence based on having a low, intermediate, or high DCIS recurrence score. I think it's also important to know that the DCIS recurrence score has been studied for its clinical utility. This is a study of about 127 patients enrolled on 12 centers. And if you look all the way to the left at the figure that says all recommendations, you can see prior to the assay, roughly 71% of patients were not recommended to have radiation therapy for the scenario. 71% was recommended to have radiation therapy, and only 28% was recommended not. When providers knew what the score was post-assay, they reevaluated their plan, and fewer patients overall recommended radiation. But importantly, it's interesting to note that it was a pretty equal amount of shift that patients that providers who previously had not recommended radiation then did so, and those who did and those who had recommended radiation based on the score did not, meaning that the score helped adjust and tailor their decisions for radiation therapy post-lumpectomy. There's another newer score out, Payload DX, from presented decision RT within the last couple of years. It assesses critical pathways as well as integrates a clinical pathologic factors. In here, you can see the comparison of the decision RT to the Oncotype DCIS recurrence DCIS score. The decision RT has been studied in the Swede DCIS trial in about 1,000 patients. 873 had central pathology review of paraffin embedded tissue. And you can see that the decision RT score, in addition to being prognostic, is predictive for radiation benefit. When they looked at low risk decision score less than 3, there was no benefit of radiation compared to elevated risk of greater than 3. Was predicted for an absolute radiation benefit of 10%. So this is now being studied in a registry study across the country, and we expect that we have more information coming through it. In the last few minutes on this DCIS component, I would like to talk about treatment for ductal carcinoma in situ. This is the radiation that was used on the 5 randomized trials for radiation post-lumpectomy. The reason I wanted to show this is basically for the column all the way on the right, that boost was just not used in this data at all over time, even from the earliest trials to the most recent. The breast radiotherapy in all of those trials was with a 2-gray fractionation, 1.8 to 2-gray fraction with conventional radiation. However, in the modern era, it's safe to say that the Standard treatment for whole breast irradiation for DCIS is hypofractionated. I personally use 42.56 gray in 16 fractions. But following the recent publications of the APBI trials, I also think it's reasonable to and frequently do offer these patients accelerated partial breast irradiation. I personally use a 38.5 gray in 10 fractions BID, but certainly you can use the NYU, University of Florence, 30 gray in 6 fractions every other day as well. Not too long ago, there was a large multi-institutional retrospective analysis demonstrating that there was a benefit to adding Boost after whole breast irradiation for ductal carcinoma in situ, with a long median follow-up. But I think, again, would offer that there are other studies that don't confirm this, and particularly this study that Tom Julian presented over a decade ago actually looked at B24 optional boost. Approximately 30% of the patients were boosted on B24, and what they found is you can see in the table the likelihood of in-breast recurrence with and without boost, and with the, there was no significant reduction in the risk of in-breast recurrence, even when they looked at it with interactions with margins, comedonecrosis, and age. So, what's my summary on DCIS? That mammographic screening has resulted in the diagnosis of smaller, lower-grade DCIS that's mostly hormone-sensitive. Radiation therapy post-lumpectomy durably reduces all and invasive in-breast recurrence by 50% or more. This also applies to low-risk DCIS as well. Adjuvant treatment of DCIS post-lumpectomy is specific to hormone sensitivity. Endocrine therapy for hormone-sensitive DCIS can be tamoxifen and also anastrozole in women older than age 50 and younger than age 60. The low-risk DCIS has an overall lower incidence of in-breast recurrence after lumpectomy compared to that with high-risk features, such that women may elect to omit radiation. For those who do undergo radiation, there's a significant benefit from treatment. Finally, multi-gene assays, particularly when combined with clinical variables, can provide individual prognosis for in-breast recurrence post-lumpectomy that can tailor decisions about adjuvant radiation. This leads me to my first SACME question. Based on the information provided below, which of the following women who have had a lumpectomy with negative margins for a mammogram detected ductal carcinoma in situ has a high-risk disease and therefore not a good candidate for observation without radiation? A 43-year-old with a 5 mm DCIS that's nuclear grade 2 ER positive DCIS recurrence score 8. 71-year-old female with a 21 mm DCIS nuclear grade 1 ER positive no DCIS score done. A 59-year-old woman with a 10 mm DCIS nuclear grade 2 ER positive no DCIS score done. Or a 49-year-old female with a 25 mm DCIS nuclear grade 2 ER negative and a DCIS score of 76. This next portion of the talk will focus on breast conservation for invasive breast cancer. I first want to give kind of a historical overview of breast conservation for invasive breast cancer, and then really focus on a breast cancer subtype and how this influences our treatment. Invasive breast cancer is roughly 200,000 new cases of invasive breast cancer diagnosed annually. Mammographic screening has been widely adopted, so we increasingly see smaller node-negative breast cancer. And in fact, according to the CDC in 2015, 71.6% of women aged 50 to 74 years had a mammogram within the past 2 years. Roughly 50% of breast cancer is stage one at diagnosis. And when we look at, depending on which populations you look at, or studied that by subtype, roughly 65 to 75% are luminal, meaning they're ER and/or PR positive, HER2 negative, and about 15 to 17% are about HER2 positive, and the smallest percentage, about 9 to 11 or 9 to 12%, are triple negative, meaning negative for estrogen, progesterone, and HER2. I think Historically, the safety and efficacy of breast-conserving therapy established by phase three randomized trials conducted over 30 years ago. These are really such brave trials done by phenomenal leaders when they were conducted in the early, some even the late 70s, early 1980s. Now each has more than 20-year follow-up and consistently showing that whether it was breast-conserving therapy or with lumpectomy and radiation versus mastectomy, there was no difference in overall survival. However, when you look at these four trials in more detail, it's clear that in-breast recurrence occurred more frequently after breast-conserving therapy in these seminal trials. And specifically, it was in the EORTC trial 1081, where margins were positive, and Milan 1 trial, where it was not a modified radical mastectomy, but a radical mastectomy. It's also important to note that within these trials, there was no use of systemic therapy and included frequently node-positive patients with maximum tumor sites frequently that were full T2s. Following these publication of these historic trials, there was just decades and decades of research focused on identifying factors associated with in-breast recurrence. I've just listed them here. We know that age less than 50 or 40 associated with increased local recurrence after breast-conserving therapy and mastectomy. Lymphovascular invasions has been studied in multiple different series and find that there is an increased local recurrence again after either breast-conserving therapy or mastectomy, and it's important to have negative margins. Extensive introductal component risk is mitigated by negative margins. Tumor size, there's some conflicting studies, but there's a trend for increased local recurrence with greater than T2 both post-lump mastectomy and radiation and mastectomy. More local recurrences are demonstrated in higher stage disease, and this is seen as well for nodal status, where patients with positive nodes have a higher overall event rates. For lobular histology, there's conflicting studies at first, but in well-defined lesions on mammogram with negative margins, there overall is no in-breast recurrence. It's important to know that the addition of systemic therapy, meaning appropriate chemoendocrine or anti-HER2 therapy, significantly reduces in-breast recurrence when compared to no systemic therapy following lumpectomy and radiation. But perhaps the factor that has been studied the most associated with in-breast recurrence since the initial trials has been surgical margins. We know that surgical margins are associated with in-breast recurrence after breast-conserving therapy. There was a meta-analysis that Husami did and updated in Annals of Surgical Oncology in 2014. 33 retrospective studies with a large patient population and a median follow-up of 6.6 years. This demonstrated an overall in-breast recurrence rate of about 5.3%. But what they found is that the closer positive margins essentially doubled the odds ratio for recurrence, and that margin distance really had no effect, meaning there was no evidence that the odds of in-breast recurrence decreased as the distance for declaring negative margins increased. This really led to the Society of Surgical Oncology and the ASTRO margin guidelines put forth in 2014, meaning a positive margin was defined as ink on invasive cancer. And it is associated with a twofold increase in in-breast recurrence, and that margin with a negative margins, no ink on tumor, minimizes the risk of in-breast tumor recurrence, and wider margin with seemed not to significantly lower this risk. So this has become a new standard and has helped reduce overall re-excisions that can cause an issue with helping women to maintain a sensate and cosmetically acceptable breast. In all of those studies for whole breast irradiation that I just reviewed, all the randomized trials that we just reviewed, whole breast irradiation is what was delivered. This is also in most of the early breast cancer trials, collaborative group meta-analysis, and on almost all large registry observational analysis, it was a whole breast irradiation with usually 1.8 to 2 gray fractionation extending over 30 to 33 weeks. And until the UK phase 3 START trials remain the standard here, following the updated 10-year outcomes of the START A and START B trials, which demonstrated that hypofractionation was non-inferior for in-breast recurrence compared to standard 2 gray per day fractionation. These trials, in addition to the Ontario Clinical Oncology Phase 3 randomized trial, which also showed no in-breast recurrence difference at 10 years for the hypofractionated versus 2 gray fractionation, and that excellent good cosmesis and grade 2-3 subcutaneous tissue was similar between the two arms. This has really led to the ASTRO consensus in hypofractionated whole breast irradiation, which basically states that this is the new standard whole breast irradiation. You can see in the table on the bottom of this slide that the 2018 guidelines says that any age, any stage, any chemotherapy use, all are okay for use with hypofractionation of 2.66 or 2.67 per fraction, gray per fraction. What's actually very gratifying to seeing is that after all of that research on in-breast recurrence and margin studies and that most recent data from multiple large registries, this is just one from the Netherlands, demonstrates that the in-breast recurrence, I'm sorry, demonstrates that the overall survival and distant metastasis-free survival from breast-conserving therapy is actually somewhat better than it is for mastectomy. And similarly, from this study, from the SEER data, that the breast-conserving surgery with radiation in tumors less than 2 centimeters actually seems to have a better overall disease-specific survival compared to mastectomy, and this is very reassuring. So that's a historical review of breast conservation. What I would like to do now is focus on the really subtype and of breast cancer and how this affects radiation for breast conservation therapy. This is a data from our from colleagues at Harvard who put this out almost 10 years ago when they looked at their database at Dana-Farber of 1,400 breast-conserving therapy patients that's lumpectomy and radiation with a median follow-up of about 7 years, and they retrospectively using IHC immunohistochemistry stains categorized their patients into luminal A, luminal B, luminal HER2, HER2, and triple-negative breast cancer. And as you can see on the figure on the right, that patients who had a luminal A had a very low in-breast recurrence at a median follow-up of 7 years of less than 1%. 1%. In contrast, when you look at the triple-negative breast cancer, there was a in-breast recurrence of nearly 7%. Of note, the HER2 positive patients did not receive any anti-HER2 therapy. So this demonstrated nicely that subtype of breast cancer is very prognostic for in-breast recurrence. This was further studied in the Toronto British Columbia trial that was a randomized trial for women who had hormone-sensitive stage 1 breast cancer that were older than age 50. They were randomized to observation versus whole breast irradiation post-lumpectomy, and the results did demonstrate a significant reduction in breast recurrence overall in this population and led the trial conclusions that radiation should be not omitted. But they went back and had about 500 of the over nearly 769 of randomized in the trial. They had TMAs available and they used a 6-marker panel to subtype the patients. The largest portion, as you would expect, was luminal A. Luminal B was the next biggest group, but they had a group of luminal HER2s, basals, and triple negative non-basals that they lumped together as high risk. Important point about this study, though, I want to remind you is that all patients had tamoxifen, had received endocrine therapy in this trial. I think this trial contrasts nicely with that. This is the Swede BCG91 trial, where they looked at, they also had tissue on about 1,000 of the 1,178 patients randomized on this trial. 94% of patients did not get any systemic therapy on this trial. Only 6% did. About 1,000 were subtyped, and they were that's according to St. Galen criteria. And as you would expect, again, the largest portion were luminal A, and very few triple negatives or HER2s. And when you look at the table on the right, you see that in breast recurrence is much lower for luminal A. Luminal A low risk, defined as node negative greater than 65 years old, and then the highest for triple negative. It's interesting that when you look at the HER2 population in which they did not get any anti-HER2 therapy, the addition of radiation did not reduce local control, did not reduce in breast recurrence, and in fact, numerically made it a little bit worse, though not statistically significant. So, what are the implications for luminal A breast cancer treated with lumpectomy and breast radiation? From my perspective, what I think this demonstrates is that you can reduce the extent of radiation therapy. Whole breast irradiation has been enormously successful in allowing women to keep their breasts, but it does have some barriers. Even though it's been reduced down to about 3 to 4 weeks, that still can be burdensome for patients who are older, who don't have great transportation, who need childcare, who have a difficulty time getting off work. So these alternatives to whole breast irradiation are available for luminal A breast cancers and include accelerated partial breast irradiation, intraoperative radiation therapy, and observation. Accelerated partial breast irradiation, as everyone knows who is watching this, means the delivery of hypofractionated radiation to the high-risk breasts only, lumpectomy cavity plus a 1 to 2 centimeter margins in less than 5 to 8 days. This can be done. It's done after its adjuvant treatment, and it can be brachytherapy or external beam radiation techniques. And the goal is to achieve a local control or in-breast recurrence post-lumpectomy that is equivalent or non-inferior to whole breast irradiation. Now there have been 4 phase 3 randomized trials with a non-inferiority design, demonstrating that in-breast recurrence from APBI is non-inferior to whole breast irradiation. As you can see here, the in-breast recurrence with a mature follow-up between 5 and 10 years is quite low in most of these studies, less than 2 to 3%. And regional recurrence was similar in both the APPI and whole breast irradiation arms. Of note, this does represent various accelerated partial breast irradiation methods, with multi-catheter brachytherapy representing from the NIO Budapest and Giacchestro trial, but University of Florence and the Ontario Clinical Oncology Rapid Trial each use external beam radiation and has showed similar non-inferiority from a part APBI to whole breast irradiation. I think it's important to point out that all 4 APPI phase 3 non-inferiority trials, when you look at them, enrolled a very, very similar stage 1 luminal breast cancer populations. As you, these are demonstrates some important variables from the trials, and if you see that the median age was nearly identical in all 4 trials, the likelihood of having negative nodes was more than 90% in almost all of them. Nearly all had uniformly just T1 tumors, grade 1-2 disease, similarly highly represented, and nearly all patients were ERP positive. Now, this contrasts quite sharply to the fifth large accelerated partial breast radiation trial, which is the Energy Oncology NSBB 390413. Randomized patients to 2 gray per day fractionation whole breast irradiation, and partial breast irradiation could be either external beam or brachytherapy methods. It's important to note that this was a different type of trial asking a different question than the four trials I just presented. Well, there was a very common and similar type of population enrolled in all the other four trials of essentially postmenopausal stage 1, grade 1, 2 ERPR positive ductal carcinoma in situ, ERPR positive invasive breast cancer. B390413 enrolled women who are on average a decade younger, much less likely to have hormone sensitive disease, much less likely to be grade 1, 2. So it was a very heterogeneous population, and intentionally so, because B390413 was asking the question, in all patients who come to breast post who receive lumpectomy, can partial breast accelerated partial breast irradiation replace whole breast irradiation for treatment? And what we find is that it did not meet the equivalence margins, that there was an absolute difference, though there was an absolute difference in 10-year rate of in-breast recurrence between APBI and whole breast irradiation, it did not meet the equivalence and favored whole breast irradiation significantly compared to accelerated partial breast irradiation. Similarly, recurrence-free interval, which includes in-breast recurrence, regional recurrence, distant metastases, and death from breast cancer, favored whole breast irradiation with an absolute difference of 2% at a median follow-up of 10 years. Of the five trials conducted so far, most demonstrated a similar rate of excellent good cosmetic outcome from APBI versus whole breast irradiation, with the exception of the Ontario Clinical Oncology Rapid Trial had a higher rate of poor and fair cosmetic outcomes from accelerated partial breast irradiation with 3D conformal radiation therapy compared to their standard whole breast irradiation. I'm just showing you the NRG NSBB B39RTOG0413 data. At 36 months, you can see just the patient's global cosmetic score. The global cosmetic score is when they score the appearance of their breast as excellent, good, fair, or poor. And you can see numerically even distribution. And when you look at the mean global cosmetic score at the data collection time point, that there's no difference overall in the mean score. And particularly when you look at the adjusted mean change in global cosmetic score by patient over time, there was no difference in this from accelerated partial breast irradiation to whole breast irradiation. Also on quality of life, when you look at symptom score by patient, patients who had no chemotherapy but had accelerated partial breast irradiation had significantly fewer symptoms on the last day of radiation, and all patients had very few symptoms without difference by year 3. However, when you look at convenience of care as scored by the patients, you can see that patients who did not have chemotherapy but accelerated partial breast irradiation report having the most convenient treatment. So overall, what does this mean when we think about what has been recommended back in 2016 for the updated ASTRO consensus statement for accelerated partial breast irradiation? I have put that here. And if you look at the four non-inferiority trials of APBI really confirm, for the most part, that these recommendations were good, that women over age 50 now, the trials each recommended enrolled patients up over age 40, but very few patients were in these trials between the ages of 40 and 50. Stage 1, less than equal to 2 centimeters, hormone positive breast cancer. Is what constitutes the vast majority of the patients studied for accelerated partial breast to radiation. I did not show the data, but in the B390413 data, the use of APPI for ductal carcinoma in situ resulted in in-breast recurrence that looked very similar to the whole breast irradiation. On the other hand, I do want to say that there should be some caution in using an accelerated partial breast irradiation and other than the suitable population, non-luminal, or even the suitable population without endocrine therapy. A retrospective study from University of Wisconsin, as well as a prospective trial from Mass General Hospital, demonstrated that having a high-risk pathology like ER-negative or triple-negative breast cancer is associated with very high rates of in-breast recurrence after APPI with a median follow-up of 5 years. Similarly, in the German-Austrian multi-center single-arm trial where they looked at multi-catheter APPI, women who were hormone sensitive but did not have any endocrine therapy also had a high rate of in-breast recurrence by 5 years. Finally, I want to talk about partial breast irradiation. So this is represented by the UK IMPORT LO clinical trial. By partial breast irradiation, it means to just treat around the area of the lumpectomy cavity, but using the same length of fractionation for whole breast irradiation. This was a large trial of 2,000 patients that randomized between three arms: whole breast irradiation, kind of a low dose whole breast irradiation over 15 fractions, and then just radiation confined to the lumpectomy cavity area for 15 fractions as well. The population accrued is very similar to what we saw in the four APPI trials that found APPI not inferior to whole breast irradiation. These are predominantly, all of them were over age 50, 90% grade 1, 2, 97% were node negative, 95% ER/PR positive, and 92% took their endocrine therapy. This is what the treatment arms look like on the IMPORT LO clinical trial. And finally, these are the results. You can see with such a low risk population, a 6 year median follow-up, very low event rates in all three arms. So what is my summary for APPI and partial breast irradiation? For luminal A breast cancer, in-breast tumor recurrence is low in all the phase three trials evaluating APPI in comparison to whole breast irradiation. APPI is non-inferior to whole breast irradiation post-lumpectomy in terms of in-breast recurrence rates when treating populations that are over the 40 to 50 years old, have stage one, meaning tumors less than 2 centimeter node, axillary nodal involvement, hormone-sensitive ER, PR positive, HER2 negative, and grade 1-2 breast cancer. Similarly, in ductal carcinoma in situ with negative margins, APPI, I feel, is also a good choice. APPI is not equivalent to whole breast irradiation in all populations that undergo lumpectomy. And when you look at least the APPI trials, whole breast irradiation results in a lower event rate across all groups. So this is the second SACME question. This is which of the following statements regarding local recurrence is correct regarding four clinical trials evaluating accelerated partial breast irradiation compared to whole breast irradiation after breast conserving surgery? A, APBI was superior to whole breast irradiation in all stage 1 breast cancer patients. B, APBI was not inferior to whole breast irradiation in hormone-sensitive stage 1 breast cancer. C, APBI was superior to whole breast irradiation in node-positive breast cancer. And D, APBI was non-inferior to whole breast irradiation in triple-negative stage 1 breast cancer. I next would like to talk about intraoperative radiation therapy, partial breast irradiation, as also an alternative to whole breast irradiation in luminal stage 1 breast cancer. The advantage of IRT, it has very localized dose with direct visualization of the area to treat. It reduces patient burden of care, reduced travel for external beam, spare a second procedure for a brachytherapy. APPI is essentially one-stop shopping. You get your surgery and radiation in one day. The disadvantages might be it's too localized a dose. The biggest one that I think of is that final pathology is known, unknown, and such that when final pathology is known, that it may be the patient would need additional radiation, such that she receives a double treatment, IORC plus another one. Evidence is still evolving, and it does require additional OR time, which the surgeons I work with like to mention frequently. This is the Mobitron looks like that we have when delivering IORT. Electron IORT was really championed by Dr. Veronese at the European Institute of Oncology in Milan. You can see on the right where they, after lumpectomy, they mobilize the breast and add a lead or plexiglass shield underneath the breast to protect the chest wall. It's typically given 21 grade or 1 to 2 centimeters around the cavity with 6 to 8 MeV electrons, 5 to 8 centimeter diameters cones for treatment, and a depth of 1 to 3 centimeters typically. There was a large phase 3 randomized trial of 1,300 patients conducted from 2000 to 2007. This had, again, similar population that you would see in the APBI trials, in that most were T1 tumors and 90% hormone sensitive, but because final pathology was unknown, 21% of patients had N1 or positive nodes. And in fact, 5.5% had N2 nodes and received radiation to breast and regional nodes. With a median follow-up of 5.8 years, Elliot did have an in-breast recurrence risk of 5.3%, which was really quite acceptable, and in fact is what the statistical analysis had expected. What was unexpected is the whole breast irradiation overperformed with an in-breast recurrence at 5 years of 0.7%, such that it made Elliot did not meet the non-inferiority margin and was declared inferior to whole breast irradiation. Of note, in this trial, there was significantly higher rates of in-breast recurrence for patients who had T2 tumors, grade 3, ER negative or triple negative breast cancer. The investigators that using Elliott at the Institute of Oncology in Milan actually combined their patients treated off protocol with their patients treated on protocol to retrospectively look at them about what the outcome would be if their patients had met the ASTRO guidelines. And this is according to the first ASTRO guidelines in 2009, when the age was above 60 years old for suitable. Nevertheless, what they found was when they had patients within the suitable category, that they had a very low risk of in-breast recurrence of 1.5%, and significantly higher for those with cautionary and unsuitable. Again, pointing out that electron IORT could be effective in the population. The issue is not knowing what the final pathology is at the time of delivery. This is the target technique that uses a point source of KV energy X-ray photons and targets one maker of this. There are others. It's a miniature electron generator and accelerator. As you can see on the right of the figure, 20 gray is given at the surface of that's inserted into the cavity, and about 5 to 7 gray is actually at the depth of about 10 millimeters or 1 centimeter. There was a large 3,000 patient trial randomized to receive either whole breast irradiation or intraoperative radiation with a KV device. About half of them were immediately IORT or pre-pathology IORT done in the operating room before closure, and about the other group was delayed intraoperative radiation therapy, and about where the cavity had been closed and was taken back to the operating room and opened up. Overall, you can see that target had a statistically higher rate of in-breast recurrence with a very short follow-up of 29 months compared to whole breast irradiation. However, it did meet the non-inferiority margin at the time of this reporting. It's interesting, they also report that while breast cancer mortality was the same between the two treatment arms, all-cause mortality was actually worse at 29 months from the whole breast irradiation. Both this trial and the Elliott trial actually have updates that are coming out this year, which I'm disappointed I do not have to show you. One of the things that I do have a worry about intraoperative radiation therapy is that the goal is to give them their definitive course of radiation as their sole method of treatment following lumpectomy. But in about 15.2% of target underwent whole breast irradiation. In the target A pre-pathology group, fully 21% had to have an additional course of radiation for external beam. 17% on target retrospective underwent whole breast irradiation. And please keep in mind that the intraoperative partial breast irradiation using the KV type of device is meant to be risk adapted, meaning they expect patients to a percentage of patients to have whole breast irradiation. My point is, I think this adds additional toxicity and added costs. And one of the things that should be considered and weighed quite seriously when you're considering using IORT for breast conservation therapy. Additionally, many people will say, well, we can just transition the 20 or 21 gray given with IORT to a boost. But please understand that that's more dose than is needed. If you look on this table, a regular 10 gray, 5 fraction, 2 gray boost has a biological equivalent dose of about 16.7 gray using an alpha beta of 3. And when you look at the EORTC boost trial, 16 gray and 8 fractions with 2 gray fractions. That gives you a biological equivalent dose of about 26.7 gray. But in contrast, when you use IORT, looking at either 8 to 10 gray fractions with IORT, or importantly, 20 gray in one fraction, you have a 10 times higher biological equivalent dose. And this could contribute and work against that goal of ours to maintain a sensate and acceptable cosmetic appearance to the breast. So, in summary, for luminal breast cancer and IORT, one of the multiple methods for treating stage 1 hormone-sensitive HER2 breast cancer in women over age 50, the strength of IORT partial breast irradiation is patient convenience. The challenge is avoiding adverse pathology and making sure you have an optimal patient population, which is the astro-suitable group. If you are going to use IORT, my personal opinion is that a sentinel lymph node biopsy should be done, frozen section, and wait to make sure that it is negative prior to proceeding with the IORT. I think IORT PBI we should learn more about with updated results coming from both the Elliott and Target trials, and hopefully this will address some of the inherent challenges that require kind of a thoughtful balance against potential harms, potential benefits. Finally, in the last couple of minutes here, I would like to review omission of radiation therapy for breast conservation, as I think this too is a feasible in luminal breast cancers. We know that this has been studied well in luminal stage 1 breast cancer who are elderly women, both the CLGB9343 and PRIME2 randomized patients post-lumpectomy to receive whole breast irradiation versus observation with the under that were on endocrine therapy. It's important to note from these trials that radiation, as expected, significantly reduced the likelihood of experiencing in breast recurrence. In both the CLGB9343 and the PRIME2 trials, patients who received a radiation therapy had a significantly lower in-breast recurrence. However, death from all causes and death from breast cancer and mastectomy free rate was similar with and without radiation. This has, and in particular, the death from breast cancer was very small relative to the death from all causes in an older population that could have multiple comorbidities. This has led to NCCN recommending in women over age 70 who have had a lumpectomy and have hormone-sensitive disease to consider omitting radiation therapy post-lumpectomy. The issue is that other than this group of elderly women in the CLGB9343 and PRIME2 trials, the other three trials that looked at of randomized trials of omitting radiation in what was considered low-risk invasive breast cancer, meaning hormone-sensitive and clinical pathologic factors, if you look all the way to the end on, without radiation had significantly varying rates of in-breast recurrence without radiation. This really creates concern about omitting radiation, not putting patients at harm for significantly poorer outcomes. This is where we think a multi-gene assay could be helpful to be able to select which of the hormone-sensitive stage one breast cancers could omit radiation. We know that the use of a recurrence score and actually mamma print has been studied for identifying patients. Its prognosis for prognostic for reduced local distant metastases following and is predictive of no chemotherapy benefit when you have a low recurrence score or a low risk mamma print. These are two studies here on this slide where this has now been studied for local regional recurrence. The Oncotype recurrence score less than 18 was studied in NSBB14 clinical trial, which was randomized for women plus or minus tamoxifen. Here you can see that patients with a recurrence score of less than 18 had a 4.3% risk of 10-year local in-breast recurrence, which is roughly a third of what was seen in the high risk in the recurrence score greater than 31. Similar with the mamma print in the Netherlands registry, low risk mamma print had a 5.8 in breast recurrence by 10 years. This was more than doubled in the high-risk mamma print. There have been genomic or immunohistochemical assays selecting stage for one ERPR positive at low risk for local recurrence now in multiple prior randomized trials. You can see the selection criteria for low risk varied, but consistently for patients with lumpectomy and radiation, we see very low risks of in-breast recurrence when using a multi-gene assay to select which patients with stage one hormone-sensitive breast cancer perhaps could omit radiation. The question then becomes, would these patients be, or could we be placing these patients at risk for excess distant metastases? And this was a study done by the National Cancer Institute Breast Oncology Local Disease Task Force in collaboration with the CISNET. And they looked at a pooled data analysis from seven trials. You can see that four of these are randomized trials that we've seen similarly listed, and then three of them were trials that all had radiation therapy after breast-conserving surgery, but they had information on recurrence score. And this pooled analysis looked at patients who would fit into a clinical trial that had undergone a lumpectomy for a stage one ERPR positive HER2 negative, and were treated with hormonal therapy only for this disease. What they did is predicted what Oncotype recurrence score of less than 18 would be based on the GHI SEER analysis, and this led to a population of about 1,800 patients. When they looked at the omission of radiation, they did find that overall that radiation reduced in breast recurrence, but the absolute difference in relapse-free interval at 5 years was fairly modest at 4.4%, and similarly, excess local recurrence was also about just between 4 and 5% without radiation, and there was no difference in distant metastatic rate, breast cancer-specific mortality, or all-cause mortality. This really made us think that if we did a study where we women want to elect no radiation if the absolute improvement was only about 4 to 5% long term, and that's now being studied by multiple different investigators in three prospective trials and one randomized trials, some using immunohistochemical studying for subtype, others using recurrence score and or PAM50. In addition, this large phase 3 randomized trial from Energy Oncology has been approved by the National Cancer Institute. It will accrue 1,760 women who are greater than age 50 and less than 70 who have had a lumpectomy for a stage 1 hormone sensitive breast cancer and have a recurrence score of less than 18. They will be randomized to radiation versus observation. And then we have their many correlative studies and quality of life studies to help us figure out what are important trade-offs for women who may want to accept no radiation. So my summary is that omission of radiation in luminal breast cancer, this is the population when it makes the most sense to further study, as it has the lowest rate of in-breast recurrence. However, I think we have seen that clinical and pathologic factors alone still yield really variable rates of in-breast recurrence with time. RNA gene expression assays, particularly when combined with clinical features, can identify luminal breast cancer cases with very low likelihood of radiation of in-breast recurrence post lumpectomy and radiation. Ongoing and future trials are focusing on omitting radiation post lumpectomy in low-risk luminal breast cancer identified by multi-gene assay. This leads us to our third SACME question. A 39-year-old woman has undergone lumpectomy and sentinel node biopsy for an anatomic T1B N0M0 breast cancer, which was 8 millimeters in size, grade 3. Estrogen receptor negative, progesterone receptor negative, and HER2 negative, or means it's triple negative breast cancer that had negative resection margins and two sentinel nodes, which were both negative. Which breast radiation approach should you recommend as supported by randomized clinical trial evidence? A. Whole breast irradiation. B. Intraoperative partial breast irradiation. C. Accelerated partial breast irradiation. Or D. Observation without irradiation. Finally, for the last portion of this talk, I'm going to focus on regional nodal radiation and start off by in the adjuvant setting. First of all, let's clarify what I mean by regional nodal radiation. This is when you are targeting the axilla, meaning what did not get removed with sentinel node biopsy or an axillary dissection. This is referred to as the undissected or retained axilla, supraclavicular nodes, and including the internal mammary nodes, most commonly in the first three intercostal spaces, but some first four intercostal space. These are the landmark randomized trials that establish the historical indications for regional nodal radiation with the chest wall or post-mastectomy radiation therapy. As you can see, there was a highly statistically significant improvement, absolute improvement in breast cancer survival with the addition of radiation therapy following mastectomy in these women who were all received systemic therapy with CMF chemotherapy or tamoxifen. This really is what established the historical indications for regional nodal radiation as put forth by the ASCO post-mastectomy radiation therapy guidelines 20 years ago, that which said that four or more axillary nodes with metastases and two axilla or tumors greater than 5 centimeters in size with one or more nodes, T3N1, should be received post-mastectomy radiation therapy to the chest wall and regional nodes, and that what should be treated was a supraclavicular and axilla, but there was significant debate about necessity of targeting the internal mammary nodes. Well, I think in the last several years, there's been numerous clinical trial data now that supports the use of regional nodal radiation in breast cancer patients with 1 to 3 axillary nodal metastases, both as part of post-mastectomy radiation or as part of breast radiation. The post-mastectomy radiation, there's been demonstration of improved disease-free survival and overall survival in trials. Post-lumpectomy, there's been improved disease-free survival in trials, and there's a trial that demonstrates improved distant disease-free survival when internal mammary node radiation is included. Starting off, let's look at these separately. This is the early breast cancer trialist meta-analysis from 2014 that looked at a large population of their data, but were really cleaned up and where they included patients that had chest wall and all regional nodes treated, as well as receiving some chemotherapy. And this it was about 8,000 patients all together, but this was the smaller cohort of about 1,300 women with 1 to 3 positive nodes. And you can see the addition of a post-mastectomy radiation. And all patients had an axillary node dissection with at least 10 nodes on average. And you can see that the addition of radiation reduced local regional recurrence significantly by about 16% and had about 11% reduction or gain in overall control. And this improved breast cancer mortality by 20 years by about 8%. Now, these meta-analysis receives a lot of criticism. One, because of the high rate of post-mastectomy local regional recurrence at 20.3%, and really, it's felt that this data was from a different treatment era, from 1964 to 1986, and includes older systemic therapy, that it might be not too reflective of the need for radiation treatment in our current modern treatment era. However, two additional randomized trials have really addressed this question. The first is the NCIC MA20 trial, which looked at node-positive breast conservation post-lumpectomy. Patients were randomized to whole breast irradiation alone versus whole breast regional nodal radiation, as demonstrated in the figure, with the first three intercostal spates, the axillary apex, and the supraclavicular nodes included. In addition, EORTC trial 22922 included was for node-positive patients and also node-negative with central or medial tumors. Patients were randomized to receive no internal memory or median internal memory or medial supraclavicular radiation. Internal memory medial supraclavicular radiation is seen in the figure on the right. This was a large trial of 4,000 patients. Both trials had a median follow-up of 10 years when they reported. Talk more about that, but I think it's acknowledged that these gains were come at the price of some excess toxicity. And this lists the grade 2-3 toxicity on the MA20 clinical trial. You will see acutely there was slightly more radiation pneumonitis and radiation dermatitis. Long term, there was more lymphedema, permanent skin changes, and subcutaneous tissue changes. And I think it's quite remarkable that there was only one grade 4 toxicity or a transient motor neuropathy in the ipsilateral arm in the whole breast irradiation regional nodal radiation group, and there was no grade 5 toxicity at all. And I think when you do consider what the MA20 and the EORTC clinical trials in axillary node positive breast cancer tell us, is that regional nodal radiation overall gives us about a 3 to 5% consistent reduction in distant metastases and improvement in disease-free survival. At the gains in local control are somewhat more modest, and they're proportional to the reduction in distant metastases. And really, one of the main effects of regional nodal radiation in both of these trials was systemic, with the affecting distant metastases and distant disease survival and disease-free survival. And honestly, you can say, well, this is pretty modest at 3 to 5%. I would present to you that there are other interventions we do in breast cancer oncology, which we accept with similar modest benefits. Here's an example of the ATAC trial, which compared tamoxifen to anastrozole in hormone-sensitive patients, which were both. And you can see the difference in disease-free survival at 10 years was 2.6% in this trial. The Danish breast cancer group did a very clever internal memory node study. It's a prospective study. It's not randomized. It's a large population. What they did is right-sided patient received chest wall radiation and supraclavicular and axilla, but if they were plus internal memory nodes, and on the left side there was no internal memory nodes. And they then reported 8-year outcomes. And what they found overall was that there was at 8 years there was a trend towards a reduction in distant metastases in the patients who had the internal memory node radiation. There was improved breast cancer mortality and overall survival in patients who received internal memory node radiation. And that's seen here, where the effect of internal memory node irradiation in early node-positive breast cancer improved overall survival in the figure A, and figure B shows a reduced breast cancer mortality. And the internal memory node irradiation showed a reduced distant recurrence. So these trials have really influenced guidelines for how we treat patients. Back in 2001, the ASCO guideline recommended post-mastectomy radiation to the chest wall and regional nodes for those who are greater than 4 positive nodes, stage 3, felt there was insufficient evidence for 1 to 3 positive nodes. And now, it was controversial about including the internal mammary nodes. You can see the difference in 2016, where post-mastectomy radiation therapy to the chest wall with regional nodal radiation is recommended for 1 to 3 positive nodes and should include the supraclavicular, axillary, and internal mammary nodes. So this leads us to our fourth SACME question. Women who received regional nodal radiation in the MA20 trial had a lower incidence of local recurrence and distant metastases. Which of the following statements is true regarding toxicity? A, regional nodal radiation was associated with more acute dermatitis and less lymphedema. B, regional nodal radiation was associated with less acute dermatitis and less pneumonitis. Regional nodal radiation was associated with more acute dermatitis and late lymphedema. And D, regional nodal radiation was associated with less late skin changes and lymphedema. One thing that I would like to comment on as we talk about including internal mammary node radiation, we certainly don't have time on this talk to talk a lot about methods, but that with modern treatment planning, this can be done safely. This is an example of a study done by one of my colleagues, Dr. Jose Bazan, where he looked at 202 women treated with regional nodal radiation consecutively in our institution and looked at radiation methods. Then identified patients who did not meet guidelines and found on a multivariate analysis that IMN radiation versus not was really non-significant, that including it did not mean that overall was not associated with unacceptable heart doses. So I think this just points out that it can be used in treatment, and the inclusion of IMNs, of course, always has to be weighed about avoiding the heart. But this is not about the importance of treating IMN. This data shows it. It's really about using judgment to avoid the heart in treatment. Finally, I think it's important to say that many women with 1 to 3 positive nodes benefit from regional nodal radiation, but probably not all. And we know that in the MA20 analysis, they looked at which populations were benefiting more and found that probably hormone-sensitive patients with 1 to 3 positive nodes had less benefit relative to other receptor status. And that's really led to a consideration of whether hormone-sensitive patients with 1 to 3 positive nodes can omit radiation. That's supported by this study published by Terry Mamounas, where he looked at NSBB28, which was a hormone-sensitive node-positive clinical trial looking at various chemotherapy regimens. And when they looked at the use of a recurrence score in B28 for local regional recurrence post-mastectomy, what they found is that it was prognostic for local regional recurrence events in both the 1 to 3 positive nodes and then the greater than, but very marginally, but mostly in the greater than 4 positive nodes. So that's led to this trial led by Dr. Tim Whelan, that TAILOR-RT phase 3 trial. So for women greater than age 50 with 1 to 3 positive axillary nodes with metastases and a recurrence score of less than 18, they are randomized to receive regional nodal radiation plus endocrine therapy or endocrine therapy alone. And patients with mastectomy or breast conservation can be included. This is a great trial and hope you have it open in your institutions. So finally, in summary, regional nodal radiation in the adjuvant setting, many but not all axillary node positive breast cancer patients benefit from regional nodal radiation. Overall, modest but consistent reduction in in-field local regional recurrence, regional and out-of-field distant recurrences. Magnitude of the benefit on distant recurrences is on par to other accepted therapeutic interventions for breast cancer. Clinical trials demonstrating the benefit of regional nodal radiation target the supraclavicular, axillary, and internal memory nodes. I think the data supports that internal memory node targeting is important. What should be making the decision is not whether internal memory nodes need to be included, but whether you can do it safely relative to the cardiac dose. Integration advanced treatment planning allows safe targeting of regional nodes and avoidance of the heart and lung. This leads to our fifth and final SACME question. A 48-year-old woman has undergone lumpectomy and axillary dissection for a 2.5-centimeter grade 3 breast cancer in the upper inner quadrant. Estrogen receptor is 40%, PR 10%, HER2 negative. 2 of 10 axillary nodes have are positive with metastases. What is the recommended treatment for best local control and reduced distant metastases? A, breast radiation alone. B, breast and axillary node radiation. C, breast, axillary, and supraclavicular node radiation. And D, breast, axillary, supraclavicular, and internal mammary node radiation. Finally, in the last few minutes, I would like to just also highlight regional nodal radiation in the neoadjuvant setting. Well, unlike all the other portions of this talk, where I have just basically represented numerous clinical trials and how the outcomes influence our practice, in this setting, there's an ongoing dilemma because there's absolutely no clinical trial data to guide our how we should treat. All the current evidence for clinical decision-making for regional nodal radiation after neoadjuvant chemotherapy is informed by retrospective data. We know that complete pathologic response to neoadjuvant chemotherapy is prognostic for improved survival, particularly in HER2 and triple negative breast cancer, as seen in this meta-analysis published by Patty Cortazar, which you've probably seen in multiple presentations. So what does this mean for local regional recurrence and whether we should use radiation, though? And this is addressed by Terry Mamounis in a combined analysis of two neoadjuvant chemotherapy clinical trials, NSV B18 and B27. They examined local regional recurrence post-neoadjuvant chemotherapy in the absence of regional nodal radiation. And they looked at the cumulative incidence of local region recurrent. In the whole cohort, it was about 11.1%. It was very similar in the mastectomy and breast cancer cohort. What they did on multivariate analysis was they found five factors that were associated with local regional recurrence after neoadjuvant chemotherapy. This included patients' age, clinical tumor size with tumors greater than 5 centimeters at presentation having higher local regional recurrence. If you present it with clinically node-positive nodes, you had higher local regional recurrence. Patients who had a response in the nodes but no response in the breast had more local region recurrence than those who had a complete pathologic response. But I think one of the factors that had the highest hazard ratio was patients who were had positive nodes following neoadjuvant chemotherapy had a much higher local region recurrence than those who had a complete pathologic response, demonstrating the importance of complete pathologic response and local region recurrence outcomes. This is shown graphically here. This is for the breast conservation therapy patients, patients who begin clinically node positive, whether they're over or under the age of 50, and become have a total path CR, they have a very low rate of local region recurrence. Compare this to the columns all the way on the right, where there's a greater than 15% to 20% in local region recurrence if the nodes are positive after neoadjuvant chemotherapy. Similarly, post-mastectomy, when patients present with clinically node-positive disease, whether the tumor is less than 5 centimeters or greater than 5 centimeters, and there's a complete pathologic response in both the nodes and the breast, there was no recurrence in a very small cohort of patients, and this contrasts sharply to high rates of local regional recurrence approaching over 20% for those who remain node-positive after neoadjuvant chemotherapy. This data actually, another place that helps us see local region recurrence patterns after neoadjuvant chemotherapy is in the meta-analysis of 12 large neoadjuvant chemotherapy trials that included over nearly 12,000 patients. This also had breast cancer subtype data, just not response data, and roughly one-third did receive some radiation therapy, and the median follow-up was 42 months. They looked at cumulative incidence of local region and recurrence as well. And I'm only going to show you the subtype data because I think this is important in addition to understanding the importance of response to neoadjuvant chemotherapy. Here you can see that tumor subtype, in addition to pathologic response, were independent predictors of local regional recurrence. That patients who were hormone sensitive, HER2 negative with grade 1-2 following neoadjuvant chemotherapy had very low risks of local regional recurrence at 4.2%. Compare this to triple negative breast cancer patients that had triple the rate of local regional recurrence. Finally, I want to look, the third trial to look at is the EORTC 10994 Big 100 trial. And these, it was 1,800 women, over 1,800 women, all received neoadjuvant chemotherapy with FEC or taxane-based. And in this trial, there's both a response information and subtype information about local regional recurrence. With a median follow-up of about 5 years, they saw a local regional recurrence of about 5%. Here you can see on the multivariate, it's kind of a busy slide, but just to illustrate that patients with luminal A had the lowest local regional recurrence in comparison to triple negative with the highest, but also in this population they could show that patients with complete pathologic response had the lowest risk of recurrence, and those who had residual disease in the breast and the nodes. So what does this mean? Now this tells us that the local regional recurrence rates, that response and subtype are prognostic for local regional recurrence rates following neoadjuvant chemotherapy. But what does this mean for treatment? Well, here are two example of two studies. There are multiple studies, there are multiple registry studies, all retrospective, that basically shows when you have patients who have a pathologic response in the nodes following neoadjuvant chemotherapy, it appears that regional nodal radiation or post-mastectomy radiation has very little benefit in terms of local regional recurrence or overall survival. So really then, should response in the nodes change our treatment recommendations for women who begin off as clinically node positive? I think that there is significant data that is present that can help us with treatment decisions already. One is those for patients who present with clinically node negative axillas. They tend to overall already get less regional nodal radiation after neoadjuvant chemotherapy as compared to if they had upfront surgery. We know from the Centina trial, which I have the schema on the left for, when you look at this, the arm B, that the when they did sentinel node biopsy prior to neoadjuvant chemotherapy, roughly 35% had a positive sentinel node biopsy. We do know that if they went on and had a the second sentinel node biopsy post neoadjuvant chemotherapy, about 71% of them end up negative and about a third remained positive. Therefore, for a patient who is a clinically node negative who stays YPN0 following neoadjuvant chemotherapy, typically they do not receive regional nodal radiation. Had this patient received surgery first, most of these patients would be recommended to have regional nodal radiation based on the prior data because they have 1 to 3 positive axillary nodes. However, if a patient like this gets neoadjuvant chemotherapy first, roughly about 25% of them will be spared regional nodal radiation as they'll remain with the use of neoadjuvant chemotherapy. The other group for which we have fairly good, the retrospective data supports, is those with locally advanced breast cancer benefit from post-mastectomy radiation after neoadjuvant chemotherapy. All the data I just presented on local regional recurrence, particularly in the trials showing that there's not much benefit of radiation, we're really talking about operable breast cancer before neoadjuvant chemotherapy. Here in this older study from MD Anderson looking at 6 prospective neoadjuvant chemotherapy trials, you can see it for patients who have very advanced disease, clinical stage 3B, T4, N2-3, post-mastectomy radiation therapy improve 10-year cause-specific survival, and particularly with those who have more than 4 positive nodes after. Neoadjuvant chemotherapy. Overall, then, my recommendations for regional nodal radiation after completing neoadjuvant chemotherapy, that if you're clinically node negative going in and you remain pathologically node negative after neoadjuvant chemotherapy, no regional nodal radiation, just observation is appropriate. If you're clinically node positive going prior to neoadjuvant chemotherapy and the nodes remain positive, I hope that you're convinced that all the data I showed you, that these patients are at very high risk of local regional recurrence and should receive regional nodal radiation. If patients have locally advanced breast cancer, meaning clinically N2-3 disease, as well as having stage 3B or above, even if they have a complete pathologic response, regional nodal radiation is still recommended. And the group for which there is unknown what to do is this really these patients who have clinically N1 disease and they have operable disease, they receive neoadjuvant chemotherapy and become downstaged to YPN0 with or without past CR in the breast as well. And this is for which we have been enrolling on the clinical trial Energy NSVP B51 RTOG 1304. Regional nodal radiation is appropriate in many of these women, but it might be equally appropriate to observe patients who have a clinical small volume of disease to start with in our YPT0, or if they are YPT1 luminal, because we know that the luminal subtype has a low risk of local regional recurrence, or for older age women. This is the clinical trial NSVP B51 RTOG 1304, specifically geared towards N1 clinical N1 breast cancer, operable breast cancer. It has to be confirmed with biopsy that the node is positive. And those that are downstaged to YPN0 are randomized to no regional nodal radiation in arm 1 versus regional nodal radiation with a targeted accrual of over 600 patients. I am thrilled to say that we are closing in on completing this trial. Nearly 90% is accrued, and we target closure by September 2020. Here I've included the characteristics we see so far, and you can see this is a predominantly HER2-positive breast cancer trial, as you would expect, with triple-negative the most common. Most patients, probably 75, three-quarters, have also had PCR in the breast. Interestingly, about 40% have had mastectomy, so we'll get this answer in both lumpectomy and mastectomy. I want to thank you for your attention today. I'm sorry I've went a little bit over. And I look forward to being on the discussion with the virtual discussion if you have any questions.